electrons. The so-called microbial fuel cell uses the freed electrons to generate electricity.
That sounds great. So where can I get one?
Nowhere yet. Microbial fuel cells are still in the early prototype stage. But one day they could make a huge difference. The researchers think that in time, the cells could produce around 25% of the world's energy demand and help reduce our use of fossil fuels.
But meanwhile, I'm starving.
Want to share my lunch?
That depends. What do you have?
This moment of science comes from Indiana University.
Today's program was prepared by Jeremy Shear with help from Bruce Rittman at Arizona State University. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For a moment of science, I'm Don Glass.
And I'm Yael Cassander.
In sports this afternoon, 41-year-old Atlanta pitcher John Smoltz will undergo season-ending surgery on his ailing right shoulder next week. The only pitcher in baseball history with 200 wins and 150 saves already has returned from four operations on his elbow, but it's highly improbable for someone his age to come back from a major procedure, and today's news conference took on the tenor of a retirement announcement. Triple Crown hopeful Big Brown will start Saturday's Belmont Stakes from the inside post position in a 10-horse field. The Kentucky Derby and Preakness winner is listed at 2-5 odds for the grueling 1.5-mile race. A Belmont victory would make him the first Triple Crown winner in 30 years. Frenchman Gaël Monfils upset 5th seed David Ferrer of Spain 6-3, 3-6, 6-3, 6-1 in a quarterfinal match today in Paris and will take on Roger Federer in the French Open semifinals. Pittsburgh will host Detroit tonight for Game 6 of their Stanley Cup final. The Pens cut the Red Wings' lead in the best of seven affair, to 3-2 with a triple overtime victory Monday night in the Motor City. The Chicago Cubs are on the verge of their first 10-game winning streak in 9 years. They'll look to accomplish that feat when they try to complete a road sweep of the San Diego Padres tonight. The Cubs are 5-1 versus San Diego this season. The St. Louis Cardinals emerged with a 6-1 win over the Washington Nationals last night in a game with two rain delays totaling 2 hours and 40 minutes. That was 13 minutes longer than the actual playing time. The series continues tonight in Washington. And the Kansas City Royals have lost 13 of 15 going into tonight's matchup against the White Sox in Chicago. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic Association, with offices in Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, Mahomet, Tuscola, and Danville, providing quality health care to the residents of Central Illinois.
It's 2:43. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn, Henry Frain, our technical director. There are now hundreds of channels on cable television. And tonight, the Discovery Channel is launching yet another one. It's using one of the cable's current business models, taking a successful cable channel and creating a spinoff to target a more specific audience. NPR's Allison Bryce reports.
If you want to watch this new channel, Planet Green, you got to go way, way up. If you're in Oklahoma City, it's on channel 286.
The only television network dedicated to living green. Planet Green.
Planet Green president Eileen O'Neill says one of her favorite shows is called Battleground Earth, Ludacris versus Tommy Lee.
Two mega musicians, you know, from the rap world and the rock world, and they did everything from learn about methane produced by cow poop to junk mail issues in Atlanta to green funerals in San Francisco.
What?
His name is Toxic Tommy.
Easy Luda the Polluter.
Luda the Polluter.
Is that the best you can do?
Planet Green is only one of 13 Discovery channels in the U.S.
On Discovery Kids.
On Discovery Health.
On the Science Channel.
Only on TLC.
Only on Animal Planet.
Only on the Discovery Channel.
The Discovery model, having a parent channel and creating lots of baby channels, is a common practice all over cable. Look at MTV, and then look at MTVU, VH1, VH1 Soul, and on and on. And what makes so many channels possible is that space opened up with satellite and digital cable. Subscribers may have 300, 400, 500 channels. Chuck Thompson of Cable Television Advertising Bureau.
Consumers want more choices. It's about passions. It's about pursuits. They want to have the opportunity to go to something they are in love with.
Thompson says the more narrowly focused the channel, the better the advertisers can pinpoint their audience. Advertisers who buy space on those home improvement shows on the DIY network or the military channel know exactly who their audience is.
This is a channel. There are people who will go there. And advertisers will zero in on that.
One problem with so many channels is finding the ones you really want to watch. Lynette Rice from Entertainment Weekly says that cable networks have given up on asking viewers to remember which channel is which number. Viewers rely on brands and logos.
So they've stopped looking at numbers, and they're just looking for those three or four letters they hold so dear. They're looking for Brav for Bravo, or OXY for Oxygen, or obviously Wii for the Wii channel.
Another problem is that it's hard to fill 24 hours of original programming.
SpongeBob!
So there are going to be a lot of repeats.
SpongeBob!
Nick at Night plays SpongeBob SquarePants 29 hours in a week, for example.
Here we go! I give you Krabby Land!
Even though there are so many repeats, Rice says there is more original programming than ever before.
But given the fact that there are so many cable channels out there, the chances of finding a network that has an original show that you haven't seen before are greater because there's so many choices.
Americans are watching more television, more than 32 hours a week. And according to Nielsen, they're watching less of it on the big broadcast networks. More people watching more cable. Channel 957, anybody? Allison Bryce, NPR News.
The weak U.S. dollar is making U.S. companies attractive to foreign investors. One European company has been eyeing a well-known U.S. brand based in St. Louis, Anheuser-Busch. The company publicizes its connection to St. Louis in every Bud Light commercial. But a Belgian beer company called InBev could soon swallow up Anheuser-Busch. It's far from a done deal, but just the idea has St. Louis on edge. From member station KWMU, Matt Sepik reports.
Anheuser-Busch is not the largest employer in St. Louis, but most visitors would be forgiven for thinking so. The name is everywhere. There's the law school building at Washington University, the August A. Busch Conservation Area, and of course that famous ballpark now in its third incarnation. The list goes on. Not only does the brewer, founded by German immigrants, tout its St. Louis heritage at every turn, it's also proudly American. During an ad war 4 years ago, Anheuser-Busch slammed Miller after it was bought by a company from South Africa.
Hi, I'm the Budweiser donkey. I spoke with the Clydesdales recently, and they told me that Miller is not eligible to run for office in America because they were bought by South African breweries.
So when word got out that InBev of Belgium is interested in Anheuser-Busch, the nail-biting commenced. Layoffs are certainly a big concern, but it's not just AB's 6,000 local employees who are worried about what foreign ownership might bring. John Schutte owns a trendy new restaurant in the shadow of the mammoth Red Brick Brewery. As employees trickle in for lunch, he says a takeover, if it happens, would hurt not only his business, but also the countless nonprofits and charities that rely on Anheuser-Busch's largesse.
They do so many things for so many organizations, so many people that you never even hear about. You know, they almost never say no. They're always there to help. I can't imagine that same philosophy would be existent under a different company that's, you know, not based here.
St. Louisans have come to count on Anheuser-Busch for everything from six-figure donations to the Red Cross to free kegs of Budweiser for church picnics. Local business analyst Julie Neiman says that generosity and high visibility has earned the company intense loyalty all over town.
We're not talking high society, we're talking the core society in St. Louis.
Neiman says while InBev is not known for that level of charity, the Belgian company's Brazilian managers know a strong brand when they see it. She says if there is a takeover, she's sure InBev would never stop selling beer under the Budweiser name. Not only is the century-old St. Louis brewery a required stop for tourists, it's also a carefully cultivated walk-through advertisement.
InBev will not get rid of the Museum, better known as our brewery down here. It's a gorgeous brewery, and it basically conveys an image of old-fashioned quality. Secondly, you will not see the Clydesdales going because that's an incredible image of the gates opening up and the horses coming out. That whole image of St. Louis is going to stay.
But civic leaders have concerns beyond the city's image. Mayor Francis Slay is urging stockholders to consider the local economic impact before selling their shares, and Anheuser-Busch executives have lined up a phalanx of lawyers and investment bankers to fight what could be a hostile takeover. But even those who want things to stay the way they've been for more than a century know the force of globalization could overwhelm even the proud tradition of the local brewing giant. For NPR News, I'm Matt Sepik in St. Louis.
Paul Osborne served his last day as the mayor of Decatur this week. The 66-year-old will continue to work as the editor of the Decatur Tribune. Illinois Public Radio's Jenna Dooley spoke with Mayor Osborne about his early departure and the dual role he served in his community.
He used to have a lot of jokes, you know, like, you know, when the editor of the Tribune called the mayor was always in because I was calling myself, you know, and I always had to be available for comment. I couldn't say mayor's not available because, you know, one and the same person. So, and I've never misquoted in the Tribune. Never was, you know, for all those years. So it's been a humorous part of this, too. But I've enjoyed both, and I would have liked to have continued to do both, but that just got to be impossible. And it was almost like a choice you had to make. Mm-hmm. You know, you cannot do both, so which one do you want to do?
What do you feel that you've done in your time as mayor there in Decatur?
Oh, I don't know. It's kind of hard, I think, for you know, the person who's mayor to make that judgment. It's kind of up to the people to say, you know, this is what this particular mayor did. But if you look around in the downtown area, a lot of downtown redevelopment going on, a new building going up, and buildings being rehabbed and buildings coming down, certainly creating a new environment in the downtown area. The Farm Progress Show selected Decatur for their site every other year for 20 years during the first few years of my first term. And just general economic development, you know, working in, you know, with neighborhoods, working to bring more businesses to Decatur, and then certainly in creating jobs. In the last year alone, 1,400 new jobs were created in Decatur. So I think that pretty much percentage-wise led the state, or close to it.
And now that you're focusing primarily on your newspaper, has your perspective on the job as mayor and, you know, how you approach local government changed? Do you think it affects how you cover that aspect of Decatur News now that you've been in the mayoral position?
And it has given me an entirely different perspective. I think before I became mayor as editor, I thought I knew a lot of the answers to the problems of city government and why didn't they do this or why didn't they react in that way. And after, you know, 5+ years, I understand a lot of the reasons why some things don't happen in city government. I think that unique position of it really is granted to very few people, where a newspaper editor can basically be an embedded journalist in city government serving as mayor or a city council member. And that really has been an experience that will make me a much better editor. I intend to write a series on inside Decatur city government that will start, you know, very soon, and take a look at really what goes on when, you know, when issues are discussed and what has gone on, to give people a better look at their government and why some things work and some things don't, and why some things are stopped in their tracks. And it's not from a second or third source. It's from the person who was there.
What do you feel is the unfinished business you're going to leave behind in Decatur?
Well, there's a lot. We've been, and that's another reason I really hated to leave. I hung on as long as I could, but and certainly for health reasons. And as far as I know, I don't have a terminal disease or anything like that. It's just really wearing down, and you know, some items like that. Every part of my life having to be suffering because of what I was doing as mayor, but certainly left a lot on the table. Continuing downtown redevelopment, new police, more police space, water reservoir that we need. We need to get going on hiring another city manager. We just have an interim city manager right now, and really some major issues, and they've been out there for a while, and they need to be completed. But I think my departure really doesn't impact much on that. You know, we have some experienced council members, and the mayor pro tem's been there 13 years, and so they're really, I don't think the city will miss a beat. I think there's a perception, probably.